Ladies and gentlemen, mesdames et messieurs, damen und herren, from what was once an inarticulate mass of lifeless tissues, may I now present a cultured, sophisticated man about town. Hey.
Live from the home of rock and roll, Cleveland, Ohio, it's Tuesday night and it's time for the Russell Reed Show. The Russell Reed Show is sponsored by Inca Tea. Inca Tea, this magical tea combined with purple corn and 1,000 years of ancient tradition. Inca Tea, welcome to the good life. This is your announcer, Nikki Paranormal. Catch me Tuesdays right after the Russell Reed Show on liveparanormal.com. And now here's your host, Russell Reed.
That there are known knowns. There are things we know that we know. There are known unknowns. That is to say, there are things that we now know we don't know. But there are also unknown unknowns. There are things we do not know we don't know.
Don't be afraid. Be terrified.
Creatures of the night have captured our imagination like vampires. What explains our enduring fascination with vampires? What is it about the vampire myth that explains our interest? Is it the overtones of sexual lust, power, and control? Or is it a fascination with the immortality of the undead? And what dark and hidden parts of our psyche are aroused and captivated by the legends of the undead? By the legends of the undead? By the legends of the undead? The mystery of the undead will continue to fascinate the living. The mystery of the undead will continue to fascinate.
Welcome to the show, everybody, and with me is the Reverend Michael Bradley. This is going to be a different show, ladies and gentlemen. I've done a lot of paranormal work, and what we're going to talk about tonight is vampires. Reverend Bradley has published blogs. He's been interviewed before on this subject, and he has worked with the artistic and alternative community with vampires. Now, Reverend, exactly what is a vampire? Because we think of Nosferatu, we think of Count Dracula, we think of all that. Is that close to it, or is there a different kind of segment that we don't really know of?
Well, a lot's actually been written of late to various authors, like Michelle Bellinger and Carvus Narcanum. And a lot of people have actually started coming to the forefront to take this a little bit more seriously. Unfortunately, Twilight does a lot of damage They're definitely not the sparkly little things, and we're really not Nosferatu. In short, what a vampire is any being that feels the compulsion to pull energy, prana, life force, from one being and into themselves. And that can be done through various means.
Okay, and what are some of the means?
Well, some of the means are usually ways to gather energy is through what is called the aura of a person, the energy, the vibe. Certain people just give off a really great energy, and the vampire picks up on that energy, senses it, and they pull it into themselves. You know, in a methodology of doing that, for example, if any of your listeners are familiar with the art of Reiki or traditional Chinese medicine, the concept of qi or the tsubos, their function upon a meridian, that the energy from the body can go out, leave it, and pull energy back in. Now, for most people in Reiki or in traditional Chinese medicine, that energy is pretty universal. You can go out for a walk. You can enjoy a sunny day. You can enjoy a steak dinner. You can go to a concert. The vampire is a little bit more specific in their gathering of energy. We usually tend to need a living host to channel the energy. It provides a certain degree of essence, of flavor, of vibration that vampires usually tend to enjoy. So that is what, in short, a vampire is. A vampire is a being that pulls energy in from another living being for sustenance, to bring balance to themselves, or just for pure psychological need, depending on the individual.
God, I have so many questions. does the energy have a taste or something that vampires like? I mean,
it does. It, you hit it directly the nail on the head. Technically speaking, energy is energy. Prana is prana. Chi is chi. Mana is mana. You know, the same energy that flows through every living being is the same. Where it comes, the difference is that through a sentient person, that chi picks up human emotion. And that emotion creates a vibration, a flavor, and a high. Now, I'm not saying everyone's a vampire, for the love of God, no. But we go to a football game. The team, you know, Hail Mary pass is done. Your team scores. Thousands of people stand up and cheer. Everyone shares that adrenaline rush. You're at a concert. You're feeling that wave of energy. Everyone is feeling it. So to give everyone, all your listeners, an idea of what the vampire feels, imagine that shared group experience where that heightened energy has a flavor, a sense, an emotion. You're going, oh my God, I love going to the game. My team scores, everyone cheers. And you can just feel that connection. Or you go to your favorite concert, or you're at your favorite club and they're playing the right song and you hit the dance floor. Hopefully everyone has felt that one special moment in time when they're in a group and that whole group just shares something. That emotion behind the energy is what a vampire looks for, that feeding for. Those individuals that have that specific connection to that energy that the vampire likes.
Okay, now, how does a vampire feed off of this energy?
Okay.
Did he just absorb it? Is it like a feeling, and you just really just absorb the happiness of a person? And does that person who we're
happy?
Does that person who he's draining the energy from get down? Does the energy actually leave their body?
Yes, it does. What's happening is the energy is going through, as every living thing absorbs and gives off chi, there's a constant cycle to the universe. So what a vampire is able to do is they're able to pick on the energy cycle of the person that has that energy they're looking for. In short, to walk through the process briefly, the energy lines inside the body, the meridians, They have energy points called placebos. This is all traditional Chinese medicine. It's been around for over 5,000 years. So this is no great mystery. It's been around forever, and any basic book on Shiatsu or Tai will put this in black and white. But in short, what we're talking about is this. The energy lines of the body called the meridians, they have point called tsubos. One of the functions of tsubos, or gates, is to move energy around the body, to move energy outside of the body, and to bring energy in. For a normal person, that energy is universal. But with a vampire specifically, it senses the energy it needs. The body opens up. The tsubos open up. The energy inside the vampire draws into it of itself and then pushes out, taps into the energy of their intended person, and then pulls it back in. So what it so in short, the vampire is expending energy to pull energy back in and creating sort of like a current, a straw, if you will, pulling, harvesting the energy from their intended person.
Okay, and I'm speaking with Reverend Michael Bradley, and we're talking about vampires on Russell Reed Show, and the genesis of this interview, I was interviewing a couple people who are paranormal investigators, and so one of the things that bothers me the most are rules, because you talk to any paranormal investigator, they all have their different ideas of what ghosts are. I brought up the movie Twilight, which led to a friend in common to get us involved talking, and here's the show. Now, Hollywood and books all say, you know, if a vampire bites its victim three times, he becomes a vampire. Is that kind of like the same thing? If a vampire takes the chi from a person, do they kind of turn into one to get their chi back?
No, the chi inside a person, the meridians, they're you're set. You're either a vampire or you're not. You may go if you are repeatedly abused, and let's get what abuse is. It's not the goth kid. It's not the person with the glow in the dark fangs. The abusive vampire is that middle management boss that hunts you down and makes your life miserable every Friday, asking you to work overtime and not paying you. It's the abusive person in power that is getting off to your suffering. They're vampiric in nature, and you can tell why they feed off the same type of energy. In this case, misery, pain, suffering. That's their particular flavor, and they do everything in their power to make everyone around miserable. They're usually power-tripping monstrosities. So what happens to that entire... I'm sorry, go on.
No. What I was going to ask is, in a relationship, an abusive spouse or mate or boyfriend, girlfriend, they could also be vampires without really knowing. When I say abusive, I don't mean hitting, but verbally putting them down and telling them they're not worthy and all that, hurting their feelings deliberately.
Very much so. Very much. You hit the nail on the head. If you see someone, and of course, you know, everyone has different pathologies, but if you see someone that is normally has no energy, no life, nothing, but then they engage in an atypical pattern of behavior, and then all of a sudden you feel drained or you feel tired or you feel emotionally put down, and then they automatically feel great, it's basic observational science. Why are all of a sudden you tired and you're degraded and you're hurting and the abuser is now, you know, looking like they're walking on sunshine when they weren't before? There was some type of pattern of exchange. But you hit the nail exactly on the head. Many jerks that are vampires engage in extremely abusive, controlling, manipulative, degrading behavior. And they are the worst of the worst because they're not... They're using basically their abilities to hurt people. And it can lead to depression, suicide, lethargy, or even create a pseudo vampire. And it's not that you bite them three times. If you we've all seen abused children, we've seen abused animals. You starve a living creature enough, it's going to take on abnormal pathologies. So you're not going to actually become a vampire, but it would. But constant abuse of any type will definitely shift your personality. That's just psych 101.
Okay. Now what we're going to do, we're going to take our first break. We'll be right back with Reverend Michael Bradley here in just a minute. Hang tight, everybody.
In your face, all over the place. We're online 24/7. 24/7. You're listening to the hottest internet station.
This is the Russell Reed Show.
Hey everyone, this is Ashley Warhol from the band Warhol.
And this is Tyler Marie, Cryptic Memoirs.
Hello, this is Jeremiah from Investigators of the Unknown.
Hi, this is Jenny Anderson.
This is Jeremy Skaggs with Cryptic Memoirs, along with Tim Wood with Mayflower Paranormal Society.
Hi, everyone. This is model Melissa Keys.
This is Vicki Darling from Rock Rage Radio.
Hi, this is Cindy Harper, founder of Films, and you're listening to The Russell Reed Show.
How's everyone doing out there? This is none other than Wilkins, the Hispanic Hurricane Santiago.
Hey, everybody. This is Ryan Florio, the founder and CEO of Inca Tea.
This is Pat Quinn.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Mike Owens, a.k.a. BB Slang.
Hi, this is Nikki Paranormal, and you are listening to The Russell Reed Show.
It's The Russell Reed Show.
The Russell Reed Show is sponsored by Inca Tea. Inca Tea, this magical tea containing purple corn with its powerful antioxidants and thousands of years of Incan tradition. Inca Tea, welcome to the good life.
Welcome back to the Russell Reed Show. Joining me tonight is the Reverend Michael Bradley. He is the authority on modern-day vampires. Reverend, is it safe to call them psychic vampires?
Yes. Most vampires practice psychic feeding. Some of us do practice an art called sanguinarianism, derivative from the Latin sanguine, referring to blood. And that is more on the sensual, darker side of vampirism.
Okay, now... does the vampire lifestyle involve the gothic, you know, the dark clothes, the leathers, the heavy makeup lifestyle, or is it a little bit more mainstream where you wouldn't know one walking right next to you?
It's going to be about a 50-50 split. A lot of vampires don't realize they're vampires. Those who do realize it find a sense of community by going into the psychodrama. As we discussed earlier, about that vibe and that feed, goths and the darker noir cultures tend to generate strong emotional passions, which create a very rich, intense feeding ground for us.
Okay. I just realized... that you've been using the word us, so you're also a vampire.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That works, too. Now I know why you know everything. So, hold on. You did a lot of research. Cool. I'm now doing a book. I'm interviewing a vampire. Sorry, I just had to throw that joke out there. Now... I know this is a dumb question. I mean, in every sect, there are posers and wannabes that make certain people bad. I mean, they're,
right.
You know. Now, are there people in the vampire community that do like the blood exchange? You know, try to literally suck the blood out of someone and put the black eye on the community or covet that you guys are in?
Oh, God, yes. Unfortunately, there's like any small subculture, the moment someone says, I'm going to be leader or I'm going to set rules down, someone has to jump up and say, no, this isn't going to happen. Or you will get callers or you will get mail going, oh, he's actually referring to vampirism as this, that, or the other. No, it's completely wrong. So, and you'll have people going, oh, well, yeah, this makes sense. So, yeah, you're going to, there's always going to be those individuals, and unfortunately, vampirism and these small little subcultures and goth and kink and all the other little areas that vampires tend to float around in so they can get their energy in a safe, sane, consensual, controlled, responsible manner. The moment you try to set up any type of organizational rules so everyone can be on the same page, it never lasts too long, unfortunately, because you have the kids and the posers and the artist type that think it's not real, it's not serious, and they don't want anyone to control their behavior.
Now, earlier in the interview, you said some of the vampires are people who take great joy out of making other people miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now, are there vampires that just enjoy the energies from other people and not try to put them down or hurt their feelings, but just really enjoy the feeding off the positive energy and keeping a positive energy?
Yeah. Thankfully, the great majority of vampires feed off of sensuality. They feed off of lust. They feed off the increased amount of bioelectrical input off of adrenaline. So that's why you see a lot of vampires at clubs. You'll see a lot of vampires at the football game. You'll see a lot of vampires in the soccer stadium stands, wherever large crowds gather. Shopping malls, people are usually buying. They're affluent. They're in a good mood. So on that, yes, thankfully, most of us have a large degree of ethics and will responsibly feed off of good, positive, healthy energies. Usually, the darker people don't have a sense of self-preservation, feed off of these negative emotions exclusively, and they really don't last long. They usually wind up destroying themselves in their mid-50s through various means. Other, you know, poor physical diet, poor exercise, too much alcohol, too many drugs, or whatever, because like anything else, you are what you eat, you are what you consume, you are what you choose to be around. And while these people do a large amount of damage on their self-imposed suicide runs, in the end, they wind up destroying themselves.
Okay, now, can bullying be considered if it's a group of people that are attacking and putting down certain, like, a certain individual, like in, you know, in your high schools and stuff where bullying is really big, they're vampires and probably don't know it?
A part of it is. A lot of it is social pressure, obviously, and I don't want to be the one to go, everything's a vampire, because then it sounds more grandiose than what it is. But there is a possibility that there is a person that young male, young female, the hormones kick in, the biochemistry starts to shift. There's that natural impetus to be aggressive, stupid, uncultured. You know, in other words, typical teenager. Then you get into the pack mentality of, oh, I want to be the strongest, the prettiest, the biggest, the fastest. Oh, well, this person's popular. I want to be around the popular person. So you combine the hormones and the us versus them and the innate nature of most high schools, then the pressure cookers of home, society, you know, trying to find out what you are while growing up, and if on the off chance that there is something a little bit off about you, that all of a sudden you go, oh my God, I'm so depressed, I can't stand my family, I'm doing the whole typical teenage angst, but when I do this behavior, all of a sudden, wow, I feel good, then yeah, there is a possibility that some of your teenage bullies may have that vampiric tendency where they're getting off being fed off another person's misery. So to answer your questions, of course not every bully or every teenager is a vampire, but is it in the realm of possibility under these definitions? Yes.
Okay, now, how old were you when you realized that you were a vampire?
It was back in 1985, and at the time I was 13, and I grew up on a very hard life, and so
doing what most 13-year-olds did during the whole early 80s, that whole 80s culture, is I was at a club and depressed, life is horrible, and just the right set of music and the right circumstances, and the dance floor was full, and just the energy hit me. And when it hit me, it just felt like this most exotic, exalted feeling. And at first I thought, okay, it's the adrenaline rush. It's something, you know. It's like, okay, you're coming from this family. You're coming from these circumstances. You had a good time. You're going to feel better. Well, then similar things happened. And I noticed that I, from that moment, I started to want to be around certain people. Now, of course, you know, you're young and you're arrogant and you're stupid and you never really pay any attention. You're thinking, oh, well, this is just cool. But then as I started getting into religious studies and I started getting into comparative psychiatry, alternate lifestyles, and just started down this path as I started to reflect about my experiences, like, you know, all these people had one thing in common. They had a certain artistic, social, moral, political view, and okay, just self-examination and looking at my life in the same pattern. It was like, okay, I'm not just enjoying the circumstance. I'm enjoying the energy and the camaraderie of these people. And then as I started to focus this into a more narrow view, it's like, okay, this is certain writings, and this is certain philosophies, and this is certain religions and alternate studies. What do all these have in common with my life? And as I started to do honest self-evaluation, I realized, okay, it is this current of energy that is appealing to me. It's reviving me. It's energizing me, pushing me, expanding me.
Okay. Now, I understand what you're talking about, but in society you hear vampires, you think of, like I said, Count Dracula and all that. How is that? I know they're two different things, but I'm trying to figure out how I want to phrase this. Why are you guys kind of related to each other as far as the name goes, where it's kind of a little different what you do than what is, you know, written about and shown in movies?
Oh, okay.
Or is that just Hollywood? No,
actually, it was because Bram Stoker confused a lot of the local Slavic legends. There was a noble figure, and most of your cultists and paranormal researchers will have heard of Elizabeth Bathory, who was a sexual sadist, very dark, borderline demon in human form, that butchered, sexually tortured, and murdered many young women. She bathed in their blood. In other words, she was the darker, ugliest aspects of what a vampire could be. She got off physically, emotionally, spiritually on the sexual sadism and torture of many innocents. That bathing of blood was transposed upon Raul Dracula, what we think of as Count Dracula's father, the founder of the Order of Dracul, and their methodology for dealing with the Turkish invaders. So when Bram Stoker went in,
I was going to say, and this was the prince that who put people on spears.
Exactly. So where Dracula used it as psychological shock warfare, Elizabeth Bathory did it as for her own personal pleasures. So the two legends got intermingled, and this hybrid vampire taking in blood for sensuality, male passion, and dominance combined the prince's aggressive defense of Bachala with Elizabeth Bathory's driving need to internalize blood, and thus she got the modern vampire. So there is truth to both legends. Dracula used his personal energies and desires for using blood and torture to defend his people. You have this deeply romanticized dark hero who will do whatever it takes, demands a small sacrifice of blood and passion, while you have the dark, ravaging, bestial hunger of Bathory. So you're not, so when we talk Dracula, it is a blend of these two very real life, very influential historical figures. So there is a lot of truth to the legends, but it takes some time and research to separate the mythos between where Dracula begins and where Bathory begins, in knowing who did what.
Okay. Now, is vampires have covens, and is that, do you belong to a coven?
I did. I have belonged to actually several. They are, sometimes they last long, depending on why everyone's gathered, and sometimes they're just very short term for a specific holiday or ritual or need.
Okay.
As of right now, I'm sorry?
I was just saying, how does one join a coven? I mean, if you're in the vampire lifestyle, you just know where other vampires are and just, you know, who to ask and what questions to ask to find the right coven?
Well, strangely enough, before 1990, even during the early 90s, pre-internet as we think of it now, it was extremely local. Everything was hush-hush. Everything was, and obviously why? We have to remember that it was only in the 90s where being gay would not put you in prison in Texas. Where it was only in the 2000s where alternative lifestyles were actually taken out of national psychiatry and psychology books as, you know, perverse sexual deviancy and actually considered normal. So you can only imagine being in the South saying, oh, by the way, I'm a vampire, I drink blood, and I like this type of energy, or I'm a non-Christian occultist. That would not go over very well if you were discovered. So the same type of people that were in the goth community in the early days, the same type of club goers, the same people who watched everyone's back, it was a very close-knit interpersonal family. So everyone would take care of each other. Now, today, as strangely as it sounds, you can go to meetup.com, you can go to Facebook, you can go to LiveJournal, you can go to FetLife, you can go to OkCupid and go, vampirism, blood sharing, blood sports, I'm a blood doll, I'm a donor. And now it's so open that all you have to do is put a want ad out, and anyone has any type of tendency or any type of proclivity can meet up at a Starbucks, meet, talk, negotiate, and go do their adult interpersonal business. I know that sounds rather unromantic and unoccultic, but that's just the nature of the world we live in now, where, you know, with the phone in your hand, you have the entire sum of human knowledge you can speak to anyone on the face of the planet.
Okay. Now, what we're going to do, we're going to take our second break. We'll be right back with the Reverend Mike Bradley right after this.
In your face, all over the place. We're online 24/7. 24/7. You're listening to the hottest internet station.
This is the Russell Reed Show.
Hey everyone, this is Ashley Warhol from the band Warhol.
And this is Tyler Marie, Cryptic Memoirs.
Hello, this is Jeremiah from Investigators of the Unknown.
Hi, this is Jen Anderson.
This is Jeremy Skaggs with Cryptic Memoirs, along with Tim Wick with Mayflower Paranormal Society.
Hi, everyone. This is Madam Melissa Keys.
This is Vicki Darley from Rock Rage Radio.
Hi, this is Cindy Harper, founder of FEMS, and you're listening to The Russell Reed Show.
How's everyone doing out there? This is none other than Wilkins and Hispanic Hurricane Santiago.
Hey, everybody. This is Ryan Florio, the founder and CEO of Inca T.
This is Pat Quinn.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Mike Owens, a.k.a. BB Swing.
Hi, this is Nikki Paranormal, and you are listening to The Russell Reed Show.
It's The Russell Reed Show.
The Russell Reed Show is sponsored by Inca Tea. Inca tea, this magical tea containing purple corn with its powerful antioxidants and thousands of years of Incan tradition. Inca tea, welcome to the good life.
Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I am Russell Reed. Joining me today on the Russell Reed Show is the Reverend Michael Bradley. He is a psychic vampire. He has published blogs. He's been interviewed on this subject. And with that, he's been involved in the artistic and alternative community. And I thank you very much, Reverend, for taking your time out to come on the show tonight. I am just so fascinated by all this, and we've been talking, you know, how you got started and you know, the history of vampirism. Now, how does one know if they might be a vampire?
Usually it happens at adolescence, when you start to develop a greater sense of self, a greater sense of identity. Usually for young girls or for women these days, because of the hormones in food, the additives and other such, and the greater degree of maturation and the men's cycle starting earlier. And for boys, for men, growing up or actualizing, they're a little bit different, can take a little bit later. So we're talking the ages of 12 to 15, but around that first change, that first, you know, becoming an adult, the body is actually solidifying itself, usually quirks start to appear then. People start to realize at that age that there's something a little bit different about themselves, but no sane and rational person obviously is going to say, I don't feel quite great today. I need to go feed on someone. So it usually takes a little bit longer into adulthood to go, you know, I've done the research. I've visited other people, I've tried different spiritual practices, and I have to admit to myself, I'm a vampire, and I need this particular life force and this particular type of social situation and social structure to make myself whole and healthy and well and complete.
Okay, and just, I want to kind of put an odd little disclaimer out there. Just because a child dresses in all black with the black eyeliner, black nail polish, embraces the goth lifestyle, does not necessarily mean that they are a vampire. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely not. No. The great majority of your goths are not vampires. They're artists. They're creative. They feel frustrated. They're looking for some means to express themselves. That's all.
Okay, but some may dress that way because they've realized through self-revelation that they enjoy the energy from the clubs, from the music and all that, and without really knowing that they also, you know, are enjoying like the vampire lifestyle. Is that also correct?
Yes. Exactly. It works both ways. I mean, some people get out of goth. It's just a phase. You have many goths. You have absolutely nothing to do with vampirism. They just enjoy the aesthetics of an artistic, you know, philosophical movement. Some vampires, though, they get into goth because they feel comforted by the energy and the movement. And then as they grow and they mature, they realize, oh, I am really different.
Okay, now, this is, you know, how do you stop a vampire from taking your energy? Or how would you know if, as we say, how would you know if he is taking your energy?
You usually know. Let me give you the perfect example. You're sitting down, you're having your Caesar chicken salad sandwich. You're in a crowded restaurant. You're doing great. You're fine. Your energy level's high. You have this great salad, nothing to slow down the metabolism. You have your Chardonnay, your Moscato, you have your white wine, and you're having a really great day. There is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Then all of a sudden you crash. There's no reason. You're not depressed, you're not tired, you're not sad, you haven't been to a fight, your food's great, and now this meal you're craving, all of a sudden your stomach is growling and you're staring at it. Something just happened to you. You're and your mood just crashes. Your energy just goes. You're not diabetic. You're not having a heart attack. There's nothing physically wrong with you. Spiritually, you're in a good place. Psychologically, in a good place. There's no rational explanation. And that's the key. If all of a sudden you're feeling drained for no rational reason, that medical, spiritual, psychological, ethical. In other words, if really and truly in your hearts of hearts, there is nothing wrong, and then all of a sudden you're drowning, and you're going, oh my God, someone just kicked the puppy and drowned the kittens. It's a pretty good indication that there's an outside influence. And if you're around a large group of people, then there's a pretty good indication that someone may be feeding off of you without your permission. Now, as far as defending, your energy is your own. You have bodily integrity. You have will. Your energy responds to your emotions. That responds to your will. If you're feeling this way, just in your head going, F off. You know, to be polite for the radio audience, literally, just go, F you. Leave me alone. And the great majority of the time, that will happen because you own your body. You own your energy. If they are trying to feed that deeply into you, not just the surrounding energy, but your own interpersonal energy, violating you, spiritually ripping you, and let's be honest, it is spiritual rape when someone takes your energy without permission. It is a personal violation. It is immoral, and it is wrong. So, and you have the right, as every other being, to defend yourself. And you defend yourself psychically, spiritually. You can pray to your angels. You can go into a Zen Buddhist mindset. You can reaffirm your own personal sovereignty. You can do a number of various things. But the thing is to reclaim yourself, your sense of self, your complete self, immediately upon feeling this violation.
Okay, now, as I said earlier in the program, you can almost say the correct vernacular is a psychic vampire because it's, you know, attacking your psyche and taking your energy. Now, mm-hmm. a psychic senses a person's aura. Now, is that kind of the same with a vampire? Because like you said, you know, I'm sitting in a crowded restaurant having my salad, and all of a sudden I'm happy, life is great, and as fast as you can say, what the heck? I'm down and upset. Did I give off a strong aura to attract the vampire above all the other people in that restaurant? Or how does one get singled out?
Usually, you hit on a very important point. The aura is a reflection of your energy. It's a combination of all the energy flowing through your sun lines, your meridians, and your chakras. The entire spiritual bioelectrical network of the human body is lump sum into the aura. So if usually, unfortunately, happy people, shiny people, people with energy, they're giving off good energy. If that is the particular vampire's flavor, then there is that sense when the vampire's energy goes out, like I said, from their meridians, from their placebos, seeking and searching the energy that they need to keep their body in a state of wellness, the body will seek out what it needs. And unfortunately, you hit the nail on the head. You just may have been the right flavor to be an ethical vampire trying to feed off of you.
Now, you know, throughout this conversation we're having, you always said, you know, vampires go after, you know, what seems to be positive energy. Other vampires out there that go after negative energy, see somebody who's really upset or down and really want to feed off of them and make them, you know, like you said, kick the puppy and drown the kittens to make it even worse.
Yeah, those unfortunately are your serial killers. Those are your rapists. Those are your child abusers. Those are your out-of-control, abusive, authoritarian types. Those are the worst of the worst, and they will kill. No joking, no funny business. A lot of your serial killers, if you notice,
in their interviews, if you, anyone who's ever investigated true crime or have been to haunted locations where severe trauma has happened, it will always say the same thing. Energy is dark. The energy is cold. Something left a stain here. That powerful energy fed that torture, fed that abusive person. And if you, and if anyone, they're bad. There is no other words to describe them. These are just bad, demonic, dark people. And vampirism is only the tip of these icebergs of these sociopaths.
Okay, and you know, I've done several interviews with the paranormal ghost hunters and all that, and a lot of them said they've walked in and just been overcome with grief and and darkness and had to leave the place where they were at. So,
right.
I mean, that they could have felt the presence of a vampire without knowing it was a vampire, just thinking, like you said, it was an evil spirit or a demon or what have you. So,
right.
There is a correlation between the two.
Yes. When some vampirism is not just defined as a person. It is a methodology, a technique, a theory upon which one being feeds upon another. That unfortunate but all too often results in disturbed people that when they harvest that energy over and over, it leaves a psychic impression on an area. As you have done in your interviews, when they go into where murders, rapes, tortures have taken place repeatedly over and over again, being using vampiric techniques, harvested that energy. That energy has been spilt, polluted, contaminated an area. So when you speak to psychics, when you speak to paranormal investigators, when they walk in that room and they have to run out because it was so bad, so intense, that is where that person abusing vampiric techniques harvested their particular brand of food, their particular type of energy.
Okay.
And unfortunately, the...
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the results are pretty devastatingly bad.
Okay, I was going to go in a very strange direction. Take the church. Pick a church.
Mm-hmm.
Are there vampire priests, reverends, and all that who, when they're up, I'm not saying abuse children or anything like, you know, like that that's been done, even though that could be a form of vampirism, which, but we've discussed that, but could there be someone that stands up at the pulpit, the congregation is all happy, and his sermon is all about doom and gloom, the end of, you know, end of days, and everybody leaves, you know, upset, depressed, and all that. Could that have been a vampire that just all of a sudden just fed off of everybody and really, yeah, enjoyed a massive feast, if you would?
Yes. And that's very... many vampires are deeply spiritual that are proficient in their skill set because they realize that there's something beyond them. But
okay.
On the same time, to be fair, is that let's examine exactly what's going on, say, in a Catholic mass. Thousands of people show up in a large cathedral. They kneel in tune with each other. They sing in tune with one another. They chant in tune with one another. That energy is going towards the Eucharist, and the priest is there acting in the name of God. In traditional mass, the back is actually turned. He exalts himself onto God. He is literally trained to be the scion of Christ, of God manifested in flesh. These people are praying through the priest to lift their prayers up into heaven. So it would be a very natural, logical, systematic explanation as to why one being is receiving the energy of thousands of people and lifting it into God. He's acting as their conduit, their channel. Are all priests vampires? No. Would it make very logical sense to that type of rich, energetic, dynamic feeding ground be a logical application for vampires who have a very deep sense of spirituality and religion? Yes.
Okay.
So to answer your original question, can the dark side apply? Of course. Human beings are very fallible people, and every vampire is a human being.
how could, like you said, at the mass, the priest not know he's a vampire and really just enjoy feeling the positive energy?
Of course. They call it rapture, or speaking in tongues, or being filled with the Holy Spirit.
Okay.
So they may not even know.
Okay. Now, the vampire lifestyle, is it something that you could turn on and off, or are you in vampire mode all the time?
Once you accept it and you get to a certain age and you're used to a degree of energy, you really can't turn it off. You can learn to mitigate it. You can learn to meditate. You can self-reflect, grow, mature, develop a deeper sense of spirituality. Don't just accept, but actually start studying Reiki and traditional Chinese medicine, shiatsu, acupressure, acupuncture, the way the body works. In other words, you can stay in the teenage sort of cool clubs mindset, or you can try to grow as a spiritual being to actually go, okay, what exactly is vampirism? Why does vampirism work? How does it work? Now, of course, which is why we study theories. You can't actually prove it, but there are theories behind it. And many of these theories, as I stated in the earlier part of the interview, have been around for thousands of years. So to answer your question, at a certain degree and a certain level of awareness, you don't turn it off because it becomes a heart of self-acceptance. You are what you are. You recognize the energy that you need, and you take care of yourself, just like, you have to take certain vitamins. You have to drink water. You must exercise. You must watch what you eat. Same thing with your spiritual body. There are spiritual needs that everyone must attend to, and being a vampire, you recognize that you must attend to these spiritual needs to be healthy, well, and functional.
Okay, now, I have to ask because I know all my listeners are sitting there going and saying, ask them, why haven't you asked them? Now, when you feed, do you feed with permission? And
yes.
How do you ask?
Usually, the people that I feed upon, they know I'm a vampire. And I ask them, honestly, it's like, hey, I noticed you're around me. May I feed off of you? And it's a part about negotiation. Okay, what type of energy? When can you feed off of you? How do I feed off of you? If you don't want to be fed off psychically, and they want to be bit. Because for a lot of people, we're talking about arousal and we're talking about human sexuality. The act of feeding in and of itself is not sexual. Is it sensual because of the way that the body is wired spiritually? Yes, there's this deep, warming, powerful rush of adrenaline and self-fulfillment when you feed. Can it turn sexual, for example, through sanguinarianism and blood feeding, or through certain rituals, through S&M lifestyle, through sadomasochism? Yes, of course. You can raise these energy to very exotic heights. Again, willing, consensual, informed partners that know what's going on, how they're going on, and have full rights to stop the feeding at any time, like with any other activity. What we're talking about is respect and body sovereignty. They're right to go, you're not fake. You may be my food, but you're a living human being. You have rights, duties, responsibilities, and you're entitled to every ounce of respect as anyone else is.
Okay. Now, in the BDSM culture, is that a lot of vampires in that?
Yes. I know that sounds so horribly atypical, and I know many in the vampire culture are going to sit and absolutely curse my name for letting the little secret out, but the actual truth is this. Sorry, that was... Yeah, the actual truth about it is this. When you engage in certain ritualistic acts in BDSM, what you're doing is you're doing a power exchange, which for an ethical vampire is great. It's a part of the same, safe, and consensual aspect. you are upfront and you're honest what you're doing with your partner, how you're doing it with your partner, and they have the right with the safe word to stop at any time. If they feel too depressed, too low, their energy is getting too low, they feel uncomfortable, they have full body sovereignty to sit and say, no, we're stopping now. And if you're ethical, you respect that limitation. Now, a lot of vampires don't like talking about blood play or blood sharing or sanguinarianism or their role in the BDSM lifestyle because of the bad stereotypes. But there has to be an honest, upfront conversation about how we raise energy, how we process that energy. And sensual energy, sexual energy, for those of us who like a little bit to feed off of fear, of pain, of that intense, deep, rich, emotional feast, if you will. BDSM and the lifestyle and that culture provides a very healthy, functional way of providing that need. Although many are going to sit there and curse me out for betraying the family secret, if you will.
Okay, but what we're going to do right now, Reverend, we're going to take our last break. We'll be right back with Reverend Mike right after this. Hang tight.
In your face, all over the place. We're online 24/7. 24/7. You're listening to the hottest internet station.
This is the Russell Reed Show.
Hey everyone, this is Ashley Warhol from the band Warhol.
And this is Silent Marie, Cryptic Memoirs.
Hello, this is Jeremiah from Investigators of the Unknown.
Hi, this is Jen Anderson.
This is Jeremy Skaggs with Cryptic Memoirs, along with Tim Wook with Mayflower Paranormal Society.
Hi, everyone. This is Model Melissa Keys.
This is Vicki Darley from Rock Rage Radio.
Hi, this is Cindy Harper, founder of Thumbs, and you're listening to The Russell Reed Show.
How's everyone doing out there? This is none other than Wilkins, the Hispanic Hurricane Santiago.
Hey everybody, this is Ryan Florio, the founder and CEO of Inca T.
This is Pat Quinn.
Hey, what's up everybody? This is Mike Owens, a.k.a. BB Sling.
Hi, this is Nikki Paranormal, and you are listening to The Russell Reed Show.
It's The Russell Reed Show.
The Russell Reed Show is sponsored by Inca Tea. Inca Tea, this magical tea containing purple corn with its powerful antioxidants and thousands of years of Incan tradition. Inca Tea, welcome to the good life.
Welcome back to the Russell Reed Show. With me is Reverend Mike Bradley. He is a minister and also a vampire, and we're talking about the vampire lifestyle. And Reverend, how does, you know, we were talking about the BDSM culture, the vampire culture, feeding and all that. Now, has anybody come up to you and asked how one becomes a vampire? And is there a way for them to be taught how to take in the energy needed to become a vampire?
Prism, in and of itself, where you can speak to them, because people can eat Chinese medicine, you can teach fiat. These are all energy sharing techniques. So since millions of people around the world were beyond the theory, there's actual proof that people have it there. They can feed off of everything, but it's miserable. It's like sitting there saying, if you're craving steak, and you want steak, and you need steak, you're either a vampire or you're not. You see that as a lifestyle, you can enjoy it, you can feed a vampire, you can share in a vampire's energy once they become skilled enough to start sharing and bonding and intermixing that interpersonal energy. But you can't actually make someone vampiric.
Okay.
Either you have that restriction or you don't.
Okay. Now, when I was doing show prep, I went and looked up, you know, vampire and all that, just to be able to, you know, get some questions. And all I ever found, you know, was Dracula and Bram Stoker and Rice, Twilight, all that. How does one find information out on the kind of vampire you are, with, you know, the I guess the best way of saying it is the modern day vampire?
The modern day vampire. Unfortunately, there's not a lot written because everyone's been trapped in stereotypes or role-playing games like Vampire the Masquerade, and they've taken on the nomenclature of the fantasy of escapist reality. And those of us who are vampiric and take it seriously, there's not a lot out on vampirism, which is why we blog, and now we're starting to write books, and with self-publishing and blogging and communication as it is, we can actually begin an intelligent conversation of what exactly we are beyond the fantasy and the drama. So for the basis, I've mentioned many times in this interview traditional Chinese medicine, of yin and yang theory, of meridian, placebo. If anyone feels they're vampiric, study traditional Chinese medicine. It's been around for 5,000 years. The interchange of energy will give someone a pretty good indication of whether the particular methodology fits the description of their life. If there's a further doubt, go to an actual skilled Reiki master. Go to a skilled acupuncturist. Go to a skilled massage therapist. Examine your own body. What are you feeling, your emotions? How are you doing before and after the technique? How is the person, the practitioner, feeling? How are they looking? Do they look drained? Did you drain them? And actually begin an honest self-evaluation of what's going on around you. This is very much an observational theory.
Okay. Now, another question is, if there are vampires, are there werewolves?
There are, yes, breath cats. In many Native American cultures, and being of Slavic descent myself, you have men who have taken on bestial form throughout the ages. Many spiritual texts talk about the man-beast, man-animal, shamanistic combination. So are there werewolves? Yes, they're called Therians. I have met a few. I have had the pleasure of actually having decent conversations with them, but I am not a Therian. So I am by no means an expert on that particular culture. But yes, there are Therians. They are werewolves, and they do exist, and they manifest their hyper-aggressive wolf natures very successfully.
Now, how do they feed?
They feed like most other beings feed. But with a more specific, as I was saying, you know how a vampire feeds through a very specific individual, through a very specific methodology. The emotions feed them. Most Therians feed that way through nature, through earth, through stone, through wind, through air, through fire, through drumming, through being in the woods. By communing greatly with nature, that is their channel. That is their flavor of energy.
Okay. And, you know, my last question is, you do blogs, and you publish them. Now, where can people find your blogs? And is there a way for them to continue this conversation via a chat room or through blogs? How can people get a hold of you and learn more?
You can learn more under my author name, which is the Reverend Michael Vocmel. My blog is Reverend Voc, R-E-V-E-R-E-N-D, Voc, V-A-C-H, at blogspot.com, and also at facebook.com/Reverend Voc. Or you can just simply Google Michael Vocmel, and you can find about 40 pages of me. I am very easy to find on the net.
Very cool. And, Reverend, I really appreciate your time. We got to do this again real soon. I am fascinated by this, and now I know where to get even more questions for the next time. I know we're just scratching the surface of all this, and I really humbly thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak with you.
It was my pleasure, Russell. Thank you so much. I look forward to being a guest again.
And you have a great holiday season. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the Reverend Michael Bradley. And we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Patches O'Houlihan saying, take care of your balls, they'll take care of you.